Monster Man, Episode 144, Xyl and Svart. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're going to be doing every monster, starting with X, in The Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. The first monster on today's list is the Xyl. I've decided that's how I'm going to pronounce it. It's X-I-L-L, and it was created by Brian Asbury. The Xyl is an insectoid creature that normally lives on the ethereal plane. However, it cannot reproduce unless it lays its eggs in the living body of a material being. So it pops into the material plane, grabs you, beats you senseless, pops back to the ethereal plane, takes you to this lair, and lays its eggs in you, at which point they, you know, gradually hatch their way out, doing damage over a period of time until you die. The Xyl is absolutely fine. It expresses three concepts that I think are all interesting about the way monsters in the Fiend Folio are presented. I've said before that I feel like the Fiend Folio indicates what people thought was missing from the monster manual, and the Xyl illustrates at least two of those common trends. The first of these is, apparently what the monster manual needed was more gross bug monsters that lay their eggs in people, because this is at least the fourth such monster. The assassin bug, the griff, and the tiger fly all do this. So apparently, insect-y monsters, I mean, I don't know, the griff is a bird, but it's a very insect-like bird with all its extra legs and stuff. Apparently, insect-y monsters that lay their eggs in you was very much in the zeitgeist of the late 1970s and early 1980s. I wonder if there was a particular source for it, or if people were just watching a lot of nature programs. The second is that people apparently wanted monsters that lived on particular planes, although, actually, I'm not 100% certain about that. I wonder if that is the editorial hand of Don Turnbull, because when I went back, I mentioned updating the tween last episode in light of its discussion in the Fiend Factory. And when I went back and looked at the tween's Fiend Factory entry, it includes a discussion of the plane that the tween lives on that doesn't use the expression the ethereal plane. Because that was in 1978 or 79 that issue came out. I think it's 1978. I think it's White Dwarf number 9, 1978. Roundabouts there anyway. So the Dungeon Master's Guide wasn't yet available. At least I don't think so. So probably the tween was written before the creator had access to the Dungeon Master's Guide. So I think that Don Turnbull was taking a lot of monsters that had kind of ghostly or ethereal or other dimensional qualities and standardizing the references to the D&D planar system, like this one that says, you know, oh, they live on the ethereal plane. The other thing is that the system by which the Xyl knocks you out is essentially derived from the rules for subduing dragons, but that is to say that it creates a subdual damage system by the back door for Dungeons & Dragons. So you hit somebody and you declare that you're attempting to strike to subdue, and then you take the damage that you've done them, divide it by the total number of hit points, and that gives you the percentage chance of knocking them out. This is a very characteristic first edition thing where every monster contains its own necessary subsystems. Although we have seen other examples, such as the Vision, which interacted with the system for aging. But this one takes an existing system and then adapts it into a new role. Our next creature is the Svart, created by Crikey Hitchcock, or Crikey Hitchcock parentheses Canada, as Crikey is consistently identified in Fiend Factory. Now, the Svart appears in the Fiend Factory, but under a different name. They were the same name, but with a different spelling. In the Fiend Factory, it's S-V-A-R-T. And that is because they are named after the Svart Alfar, who appear in Alan Garner's novel, The Weird Stone of Brisingamen. And I haven't read The Weird Stone of Brisingamen. I haven't really read that much Alan Garner, possibly none, which I understand is a gap in my reading. You don't have to tell me. I know I should read some Alan Garner. But Svart Alfar, of course, is a name, like Brisingamen, from Norse mythology. And Svart Alfar literally means dark elves. Svart means dark in the same way that it means swarthy in English. Of course, there are already dark elves in Dungeons & Dragons, and probably the creatures called dark elves are more like what Dungeons & Dragons would think of as dwarves, or maybe Dwergar, because Alfar elves is used as an inconsistently broad term for different categories of supernatural beings. And this is something that we've seen a lot in Dungeons & Dragons, which is that the game wants a level of clarity and categorization that real folklore just doesn't provide. Don Turnbull really liked these guys and thought that they were very useful, which seems weird to me. Again, apparently a lot of Fiend Folio authors are people who went and looked at the monster manual and said, this is nice, but it doesn't have enough low HD scrub monsters. A conclusion that I think would be very hard to come to. Maybe they just... Okay, here's a hypothesis, and you tell me if this is right. In the early days of Dungeons & Dragons and AD&D, despite the old school ethos that said, oh, you know, you should just, if there's a lich in the landscape, then there's a lich in the landscape, and you should just avoid him instead of fighting him. In practice, what this meant was that adventures did tend to focus on opponents who were round about the appropriate challenge level for characters, especially if you were using pre-written adventures, but also if you were making your own. You wouldn't send your party of first level characters up against a red dragon, because they wouldn't stand a chance. Box clever or no box clever, they would just all die. But since the game was comparatively lethal, at least compared to modern-day iterations of Dungeons & Dragons, what that meant was that a lot of games stuck around the relatively low levels. So there's a lot of, you know, liches and Demogorgon and whatever, but the truth is, you're probably not going to wind up fighting all these guys. What you're going to wind up doing is starting a campaign, getting up a couple of levels, dying, starting over, getting up a couple of levels, dying, starting over, or, more likely, a bunch of friends getting really excited, starting a campaign, losing interest or failing to schedule it, campaign dies out, friends get back together, start a new campaign, characters are level 1, blah, blah, blah. So perhaps if you are a DM in this period, or even a DM today, you're running low-level scenarios over and over and over again, and you're starting to get bored of having goblins and sturges and kobolds and giant rats and skeletons. So actually, the proliferation of relatively undifferentiated low hit dice scrubs seems more useful to you than it does to me, because I am happy just having people fight like thugs quite a lot, because I feel like humans are quite characterful anyway. But maybe you want to have enough low level opponents that the players aren't just going, ugh, not goblins again. Even those farts are pretty much just goblins. Okay, apparently they're halfway between goblins and kobolds, which is fitting them into a relatively narrow gap. I mean, they're fine. The illustrations, not the best. They look a bit cartoony, but then I like cartoony monsters. They just don't have anything other than their, like, level of challenge that differentiates them from goblins or other mischievous to malevolent low-hit-die humanoid types. So I don't know that they're so important that Don Turnbull should get excited about them, but I don't think that there's anything wrong with them. And I think if you were a bigger fan of the book, you might get a kick out of seeing these creatures appear in there. There are a lot of Fiend Factory monsters that are homages to particular works of fiction. Indeed, Don Turnbull talks about, like, kind of having to change the names of some of them to avoid infringing, but is quite upfront about the inspirations in a way that I don't think later generations of the game would be. And that's it for the X section. And what that means is that there is only one episode left of Monsters from the Fiend Folio. Isn't that strange? Because there's only one Y monster and only one Z monster, and they go together. So, next episode, we're going to talk about the Yellow Musk Creeper and the Zombie, Yellow Musk. And then we're going to do a Fiend Folio wrap-up. After that, we're going to have a short season of extracts from the Fiend Factory, the monsters that were in the Fiend Factory but didn't get into the Fiend Folio, and then we're going to plunge headlong into Monster Manual 2 on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please